It is 4 p.m. Central Time, and you're listening to my voice right here on the great GCN Radio Network, either through the internet or over one of our great GCN affiliate stations. And in that case, it means it's now time for INN World Report Radio. Good afternoon, friends. My name is Tom Kiley, and I'll be your host for the next 1 hour. We come to you 5 days a week right here on GCN, Monday through Friday, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. Welcome to the program. Sorry about that. I was a little rusty because I had the day off yesterday. You heard one of our best of programs. Actually, it was a great rebroadcast of our show from last Wednesday, from last week, where we spoke with Barry Zwicker. A very, very interesting piece he wrote. I think it made it into 9/11 Blogger, and calling out the traditional peace movement, lefty for the most part, peace movement in these United States. Although you can say a lot of the libertarian peace movement people as well. I think they don't usually go into the subject on some of the other websites. But his question was, what's the big deal? Why are these more traditional movements not dealing with the 9/11 truth movement? And also the sort of the traditional left-wing media as well is not touching the subject. I thought it was very important, so we had him on the program. Hopefully you enjoyed that interview. But we are back live now, so welcome back to the live version of INN World Report Radio. I'm going to open the phone lines right now, 866-582-9933. Give me a call. Anything that's on your mind, we're happy to talk about it here in the first segment. Call me, and I will send you out a book. I've got a couple of great books here. There's a Wayne Madsen book, Jaded Tasks. Also a great book by James R. Norman called The Oil Card, Global Economic Warfare in the 21st Century. Give me a call, say hello, and tell me how things are going in your part of the country. We're getting snow again here in New York City, where I come to you right now, and actually every day at this time, from about 1/2 mile north of Ground Zero here on the west side of Manhattan, and that's where the INN studios are located. Anyway, without further ado, let me tell you, we have a great show lined up for you today. First time on the radio side of INN World Report. He's been on our television program in the past, but I'm going to welcome today for the first time former CIA officer Philip Giraldi, who has just been doing a real, real stand-up job in a lot of the articles that he's been writing. He caused a really big stir just a little while back with the piece that he wrote about Sybil Edmonds for the American Conservative. And he also writes for, I believe, antiwar.com as well. And just an important voice and someone clearly who has a lot of experience from the inside. We're going to have him on today to talk about a couple of subjects. The discussion about extrajudicial killings, which are now authorized, or at least we know they're now authorized. How long they've been authorized, I suspect it's been for quite some time, of American citizens, United States citizens, outside of the USA. If it is determined, and exactly by whom, we're going to find out by speaking with Philip Giraldi, that these people pose some kind of a terrorist threat, they can be zotzed, as they say here in Brooklyn. Or actually, I'm in Manhattan, but I live in Brooklyn. It's a little term that they use in Brooklyn when somebody gets killed, rubbed out, as it were, older term for it. So we're going to be speaking with Philip about that. Also, the story that just came out, Patrick Buchanan was writing about it in antiwar.com about a supposed letter that came into the possession of a London newspaper claiming that Iran was now preparing a nuclear trigger device for an atomic bomb. I believe Philip Giraldi says that his sources say that's not true, so we're going to ask him about that as well. In any case, very exciting. He'll be joining us shortly. So why don't you give me a ring? Here in the first segment, 866-582-9933, toll free, call us up, and whatever's on your mind, let us know about it. I'd love to discuss it with you, and I'll send you out a book. You can don't have to worry, because you can give my producer your address off the air after we're done talking. He'll stay on the line and get that information from you. He'll pass it to me, and I will send you out a book. Anybody who's already received their books, I sent a batch out about a week and a half ago, and I'm getting ready to send another batch out shortly. If you got your book already and you took a look at it, call us up. Let us know what you think. And that would be toll-free, 866-582-9933. And there you have it. Tomorrow we're having – well, actually the rest of the week, just a great bunch of guests for you. A young man, Nicholas George, Pomona College student out in California, was going through the airport and was stopped and searched, and they discovered in his luggage a set of flashcards for the Arabic language. All right, you know, flashcards used to be, you could learn English, you could learn foreign languages with them, these index cards sort of thing where you would take a look on one side and the answer would be on the other. Anyhow, he got stopped and he had a set of flashcards. Well, he wants to learn how to speak Arabic. Presumably, that's something that our intelligence services would really like to see, more Americans learning Arabic, the Arabic language. And so that's what he was doing. But because he wants to learn how to read newspapers and so forth, he had a good set of flashcards, which included the word terrorist and, I believe, the word bomb. Well, that was enough to send the yokels at the TSA into a tizzy, and they detained him. I believe he missed his flight. Anyhow, we're going to be hearing from him tomorrow about his ordeal and what it's like up close and personal to have the U.S. government come down on you about something so dumb as some writing in Arabic on some cards when you're trying to learn the language. That'll be coming up tomorrow. In the meanwhile, I tell you, there was a big story article today in the New York Times about the impact of the teabag movement, I should say, on the right wing and on the Republican Party. It was very interesting. I read the whole thing. It was like five pages, or, you know, five internet pages anyway. And I got to tell you, friends, it's just amazing to me how this story is developing. You know, right before our eyes, friends, we can watch something that started off as an authentic expression of we the people be co-opted right in front of us by, or at least it's attempting to be co-opted, I should say, by the very, very fat cat wealthy Republican Party, who is running out of ideas on how to buffalo we the people into voting against our own interests. They were very good at it for a long time, but, you know, the better they get at it, the worse the middle class does and the more it sinks like a stone. And it gets harder to follow up. What kind of an act can you use to follow up that one? When there's no place to hide, when people have been voting for you for decades and you've run them into the ground, I mean, what have you done for me lately, right? So it looks like they grasped onto the Tea Party movement. They're going to try to take that over and aim it as an anti-Obama thing and so forth. From what I know about the Tea Party movement, it's pretty much anti-business as usual in Washington. But they don't want to have that situation come through, so they're going to try to turn it into an anti-democratic party thing, an anti-Obama thing. Well, friends, I've said it before on the air, and to my knowledge, the Tea Party movement that we're looking at had its origin in this era on December the 16th, 2006. That is the anniversary of the original Boston Tea Party, and it was an event in Boston Harbor, on that day, specifically chosen to be on that day, where it was sponsored, I believe, by the Boston chapter, the Boston 9/11 Truth Group, and another group called Connected Dots. All right, and that original Tea Party, friends, was where they dumped copies of the 9/11 Commission report into Boston Harbor. Actually, they were sort of mock-up copies of them, but they threw them into the harbor because in a protest against tyranny and demanding a real investigation. And there were lots of people coming there for other reasons as well to tag along. But the main reason for the event was 9/11 truth. Well, fast forward to today when you've got Glenn Beck championing these tea parties and he's totally against 9/11 truth. So let's see so far how far it's gone. And wouldn't it be interesting for the tea parties to remember their origin and all of them declare that they demand a new investigation into 9/11 truth? What's Glenn Beck going to do then? We'll be right back with Philip Giraldi right after this. America, you are being tested, but here's where we study for it. From 1/2 mile north of Ground Zero in New York City, you are listening to INN World Report Radio with Tom Kiley. Now, daily on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central. For 9 years, the alternative media activists at INN have produced national daily television news and information programming, top-of-the-hour radio news briefs, and INN World Report Radio. News talk radio that brings you real news the networks won't tell you, and all of it 100% certified neocon free. To find out more and for details on the stories we are following, go to INNWorldReport.net.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio, right here on the great GCN Radio Network, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday from 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. And friends, I want to welcome to the radio version of INN World Report. He's been on the television side before, but this is the first time I've had the pleasure of interviewing our guest, Phil Giraldi. I'm going to say Phil because I think that's more... More familiar for Phil Giraldi, an officer at the CIA for many years, and I think just a very upstanding American in his commentary that you can read at the American Conservative, antiwar.com, and a lot of other places. And I believe, Phil, you're working also as a security consultant these days?
Yeah, I actually make a living, and that's as a security consultant for some American companies. Yeah.
Well, thank you, first of all, for your service to this country. And for your continued service to this country by speaking your mind and I think shedding some light on areas that from your particular personal knowledge, I think you have a very unique way of doing. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
Phil, we asked you to come on for a couple of reasons. Let's start off with the big one. Recently, the disclosure that various services in the United States government are now authorized to kill American citizens abroad extrajudicially if it's believed that they intend to participate in terrorist acts that would kill Americans. Can you talk to us about that from your having read read it and from what you know from your contacts about it?
Yeah, this is to me a really interesting story that has been totally ignored by the mainstream media. I'm sure that, you know, through the past 50 years or so that the U.S. government has killed American citizens overseas, but it's always kind of been an understanding that this is an unusual and possibly even a unique process that carried out by the intelligence agencies or the military. And they've been ashamed enough of it never to have confirmed that anything like this had ever taken place. But suddenly we had the Director of National Intelligence, Dennis Blair, speaking before the House Intelligence Committee in the beginning of February, saying, yes, quite openly, we have a list of American citizens, that apparently there are three names on it currently, who we are authorized to kill as soon as we develop what they refer to as actionable intelligence. In other words, the kind of intelligence that enables them to launch a drone and the drone to launch a Hellfire missile to kill the individual. So this to me was a shocking revelation. Nobody on the House Intelligence Committee seemed to be that concerned about it. And obviously the mainstream media was not concerned about it. It's to me a complete contravention of the guarantees and the rights that we have in our Constitution.
Which I think we both agree do not end at the border of the United States, particularly when Americans are interacting with each other. Is that's a fair assumption to have, isn't it?
Well, I would think that if you read the Constitution, it doesn't say only within the borders of the United States. This has been an interpretation that's been a convenience for the government to be able to do things in the overseas environment that it would not be able to do in the United States. And that, and for example, I mean, we're fighting a war in Iraq, we're fighting a war in Afghanistan, we're fighting a war in Pakistan, we're fighting a war in Yemen, we're fighting a war in Somalia, but we haven't declared war with any of those countries. So the question becomes, to what extent can the president and Congress, acquiescing to the process, do whatever they want overseas? And the answer to that would seem to be almost anything.
It would seem. And as you point out, I'm sure this has gone on before. In fact, I've seen evidence of it happen right here within these United States. So we could talk about that later, where individuals are targeted by, in the case that I'm thinking of, the CIA itself. How do you imagine this takes place? If there's no judicial process, is there some kind of star chamber, or is there a secret court that nobody knows about? How far up the chain of command do you think, or do you happen to know perhaps through your contacts, does this decision-making process go?
Well, I would suspect that it goes all the way up to the White House, because it is such an issue that potentially is so controversial that I can't imagine the White House not having an input in the process. And as far as how the decision is made, as far as I can tell, it's a senior bureaucrat, presumably from the intelligence agencies, who gets together with a government lawyer who, you know, someone from the Justice Department who has this in his portfolio, and they basically get together and say, yeah, this guy, we have evidence, is a terrorist. And as soon as we can identify his location and be reasonably sure of that, we're going to kill him.
And so it's then a situation where I'm sure the framers never envisioned that the president becomes judge and jury and executioner all in the same breath.
Yeah, in fact, I think the founders would have been appalled by anything like this. And what bothers me, particularly as an intelligence officer, as a former intelligence officer, is that all of this is kind of based on secret intelligence, secret information that obviously the person being killed has no ability to try to rebut. And a lot of this information turns out to be basically untrue. I mean, all you have to do is look at the recent Predator drone strikes in Afghanistan and Pakistan, in which mostly civilians get killed. So obviously the intelligence can be very weak. And they're basing killing people, killing American citizens, and killing foreigners. I see the two as both equally reprehensible, on poor intelligence based on a theory that the United States has an extraterritorial right to kill people that it regards as terrorists without any due process. And that to me is an astonishing story.
You know, Phil, so many of these revelations have been coming out. A lot of people have suspected maybe all along, or for quite some time they were the case, but they come out now, and you point out it's kind of a bald-faced situation where there's no shame, and it comes out. You know, when you only understand a piece of the puzzle, you're making everybody scratch around for answers. It's the stuff of conspiracy theory. But I hear some people saying that this is a process that sort of numbs the American public. And, you know, once you get people used to one thing, it may be, you know, smarmy terrorists today or foreigners with funny sounding names, but then the camel's nose is under the tent, and where can it go from there? What do you have to say about people who think that way?
Well, I think you're absolutely right in what you're saying, and I think what's happened is that we've used the word terrorism to scare the public, and they keep bringing out the word terrorism to justify virtually anything they want to do.
Phil, can you hold it right there, because we're going on break. Friends, we're speaking with the first time on INM War Report Radio, Phil Giraldi. We're going to be right back with him just after these messages.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Come on now, people, let's get on the ball and work together.
good friends. Welcome back. And it's the truth. That's why we play that song. And it is a lot of Americans are coming together right now from different stripes, different political stripes. And a lot of people, they're putting down their secondary and tertiary differences and rallying around the cause of this great country and trying to do our best to get the ship of state back on track. And I think we're speaking with just such an American today for the first time on the radio side of INM World Report. We're very happy to have Phil Giraldi with us, served this country in several capacities, not the least of which as an officer in the CIA, and I believe continues to serve this country with his writings and his insights and his contacts in the intelligence community. Phil, before the break, we were talking about these extrajudicial killings. It's something that we probably all suspect goes on from time to time. I mean, the whole James Bond series wouldn't have any basis, I guess, if it was totally not true. And yet, I even, to my knowledge, it's even happened here in these United States with American citizens. I'm speaking about the case of Dr. Frank Olson. Have you ever followed that story? Do you know much about this man who worked for the CIA and who went flying through a window here on the from the 10th floor of the Hotel Statler on 7th Avenue in Manhattan back on a November evening in 1953?
Well, I'm familiar with the story. I can't claim to have any special inside knowledge on it. Certainly, I know that from my own time in the CIA, it was still relatively recent history that the agency was playing around with a lot of mind control drugs for various reasons, and that it was widely known that they were testing these drugs on civilian populations in various places. You know, Africa used to come up as a place where they would test them, and in rural areas in Europe was another place, and of course also on I recall hearing on people that were regarded as having psychological and psychiatric problems, who were American citizens in psychiatric hospitals. So, you know, that's the way the game was played then. You know, it was like, there was no restraint. Everybody was trying to be innovative in figuring out ways to provide national security. But, you know, in retrospect, all of this stuff was stuff that was just absolutely way out of line. I'm sure it was, at that time, pretty much done by the intelligence agencies without the politicians knowing about it, because they didn't want to know about it. But I think that, you know, you would think we've moved into a different age and a different generation, but unfortunately the mindset that says, you know, it's a security issue, it's a terrorism issue, we have to do whatever we can to protect ourselves, this kind of stuff is still around.
Yeah, it's and also from what I understand, a lot of the techniques that were developed in those days, you know, one of the many reasons that they use, and you mentioned it, there are several reasons why they were doing these things. One of them, as I understand it, was to interrogate people. You know, if you had a defector, for instance, how do you really know if they intend to be a defector or they're instead going to be a double agent? Well, one of the things they felt was, if you give somebody a heavy-duty dose of LSD or mescaline or something, you're going to so totally throw them off that they're going to have a hard time maintaining their cover. And that was one of the ways that they started out using this. And then another idea was, geez, if you spray a battlefield with LSD, everybody will drop their guns. You know, you can win the battle without firing a shot. But from what I understand, some of those techniques now made their way all the way up to the present day and are being, you know, sleep deprivation, that sort of thing. They're being employed against people, and these techniques were developed back in those days.
Yeah, that's right. And, of course, other people have pointed out that it was a lot of the sophisticated interrogation techniques were actually developed by America's enemies, the Chinese, during the Korean War, and were picked up subsequently by U.S. Army and intelligence service and interrogators who said, hey, that's, you know, that's something that actually worked. And, you know, so there, but there, you know, a lot, ultimately, a lot of this stuff is very self-serving. I mean, they're arguing that, okay, everybody can envision a situation. You know, they always talk about the ticking time bomb situation with terrorism and stuff like that, where the guy has that secret that's going to save 100 lives and you have to get it out of him. Well, you know, you can always justify that kind of thing by creating these false scenarios, because these things have never really happened. And the fact is, you use that to justify behavior which quite rightly has been condemned for 100 years and is regarded as outrageous. And that's what we're seeing again now. And I have to say quite honestly, I am extremely disappointed by Barack Obama. I had really hoped, I knew the political process was totally corrupt, but I had hoped that this was a man who had at least a shred of integrity, and I've yet to see it.
Well, a colleague, Ray McGovern, on this program on more than one occasion has said he's seen enough, and he feels that Barack Obama is just flat out, and Leon Panetta for that matter, is frightened of the CIA about going against him, about holding people to accountability who've participated in this kind of torture. I'm not going to ask you to comment on that unless you want to, but that's to your point. You're not the only one who's disappointed. But then again, a lot of people are not surprised either. What do you think? The inertia is just so strong? And plus, I was thinking about what you were talking about before. When was the last time we had a real deep congressional investigation where the cameras were going and everybody was stuck to the television set? It seems to me back when they were impeaching Bill Clinton. Can you remember a time since then?
Well, yeah, the Clinton might be a one example, and certainly the Church Commission that investigated the CIA back in the 70s was on camera and was pretty serious. But we haven't, you know, Washington, it's an oligarchy, you know, and it doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat. You're basically part of the same system. And if Obama seriously thought that he was going to change that, and, you know, obviously he was disillusioned pretty quickly on that, and he realized that, hey, I don't need a fight with the CIA. I don't need a fight with the Israeli lobby. I don't need a fight with all these power groups that dominate Washington. And so basically he's rolled over.
But then a lot of people say that he's a bright guy and he couldn't have been that dumb to be Pollyanna comes to Washington and then all of a sudden say, oh, well, guess can't do it, right? I mean,
Yeah. Well, see, I had hoped because he was a bright guy, he would realize that what was good for the United States would be actually showing some leadership and exercising that leadership and changing the way things were done. But, you know, he's basically come up against the wall. And he's decided the best way for him to survive is to make intelligent-sounding speeches that don't say anything and not doing anything.
So then it's left to we the people? I mean, you know, we talked about a little bit this afternoon. There's a tipping point, isn't there, beyond which it becomes increasingly difficult to get back to the place where we all believe we were and we want to go back to as a country.
Absolutely. And was interesting when Senator Bayh announced yesterday that he was not going to run again. The point he made was that if he were a voter, he'd be voting out incumbents by the hundreds. And I think maybe this is the only solution. I think it's maybe Washington will get just so bad that the vote there will be a popular revolt against the incumbents. But the problem is right now, when you go into that voting booth, you're voting either for the Republican or the Democrat. Those are the only two that have a possibility of winning, and they represent exactly the same hypocrisy.
And we don't even know which way the vote's going to be counted anyway. You worked as a foreign policy advisor to Ron Paul. How do you feel about a candidacy like his? I mean, I thought it was very interesting candidacy, but then again, he stayed within the Republican Party and was duly trounced in the as such.
Yeah, because he made a judgment that to be electable, he had to stay within the structure of the major parties. And I think that was a correct judgment. And but yeah, we do need a Ron Paul. We need someone younger than Ron Paul. He's over 70 now. So a younger Ron Paul may be our only hope.
Okay, well, let's hold it right there. We're speaking with Phil Giraldi. We'll be back with him just after these messages.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
right, good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio, Monday through Friday now right here on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time, where we bring you the news the networks won't tell you, and we're doing that today. Very pleased to have on as our guest Phil Giraldi, served this country in many ways as an officer in the CIA, on the staff of Ron Paul when he was running his election campaign, as a foreign policy advisor, and by speaking out and writing articles in such venues as the American, was it American Conservative and antiwar.com. Phil, I always forget, and then I'm rushed at the end of the interview. Why don't you give out some websites where people can go to read your writings?
Well, the one that I write for every week is antiwar.com. That is a very interesting website. If you're not familiar with it, it has a lot of good information. It reproduces a lot of news articles and items that most people normally don't see. And it has a lot of interesting commentators on it. I also write regularly as a contributing editor for the American Conservative magazine, which also has a website and also has a blog site, and I contribute regularly to that blog site. I used to write for Huffington, but I found that Huffington is not seriously focused on political issues. It's more interested in what's going on in Hollywood, so I stopped contributing there.
You and several other people as well. All right, let's finish out this segment, Phil. We were talking earlier before you came on. I was telling the audience that we also want to get your opinion about the situation with Iran. They're developing a nuclear weapon, the history of the United States and Iran. It seems like we're driving them into the arms of the nuclear club so that they could at least hold something up to keep us off their back, as it were. And then there's this story that came out, and Patrick Buchanan was quoting you, and there's a paper in London that is saying that they now have the capability of a trigger device. And yet some people think that that's a red herring, that might be the Niger yellow cake situation all over again. What can you tell our audience about this?
Well, there are a couple issues there, obviously. I mean, first thing that your audience should know is that there is absolutely no evidence that Iran is developing a nuclear weapon. In spite of everything you read in the papers, everything you see, what we have is a country that since the 1970s has been developing nuclear power to create electricity. Now, why would an oil-rich country like Iran be doing that, you would seem to think. But the fact is that for Iran, which is basically a second-world developing country, selling its oil is a whole lot better and smarter as a resource than using it to fuel the local electrical economy. So there are a lot of good reasons to do what Iran is doing. But there is no evidence that Iran is developing a nuclear weapon. The story you're referring to was in the London Times some time back, and it said that Iran was developing what they call a nuclear trigger, which would be evidence that they are indeed developing a nuclear weapon. I thought the story was rather suspicious when I read it, partly because the Times of London is a Rupert Murdoch publication, which is very close to the British and Israeli intelligence services. And I put some, you know, queries out in the intelligence community, and the people came back and said there's no question but that this story is a fake.
And they were quoting, what was it, an Asian security service that came up with this information?
Yeah.
Any idea who that might be that they were referring to?
Well, obviously Asia would be Israel. And the funny thing was, of course, they wouldn't produce the document itself. They said they had seen the document and taken information from it. So that makes the story even more suspicious. So yeah, the conclusion is, you know, either this is a document that's a fake that was surfaced by an intelligence service to make Iran look more dangerous, or as Pat Buchanan is suggesting, it could be, I mean, even the Iranians might have produced something like this as a story to make people worry that they might be developing a nuclear weapon. You know, there are all kinds of possible wrinkles here, but the fact is that the story itself is essentially bogus. There does not seem to be any indication that the Iranian government has made the decision to develop a nuclear weapon.
And on the subject of bogus information being passed through the media, you mentioned outlets such as Fox and so forth. Unfortunately, it's a fairly common practice. Fortunately, people are beginning to get hip to it, thanks to things like the internet. On that topic, what about Osama bin Laden? I mean, is it possible this guy still is alive, A, and B, how reputable do you feel the translations have been of his various videotapes that have gone out? What's your take on that? Because I hear people say that if you really understand the language that he's speaking in, it's rarely translated clearly.
Well, there are a couple issues there. I mean, Bobby Gates, back our Secretary of Defense, said a couple months ago that there hasn't been any reliable intelligence on bin Laden in about 5 years. And I've heard, in fact, that there really hasn't been any reliable intelligence. In other words, a situation where a reliable source is sitting across the table from him and is eyeballing him and listening to him speak. There hasn't been that kind of intelligence on bin Laden since just after 9/11. So a lot of people are beginning to believe that actually he's dead, and that what we see when we see these press releases and we see these audio recordings and we see these videotapes, they're clever composites that are made from literally the thousands and thousands of hours of recordings that he actually made while he was alive. And so there, you know, I'm somewhat convinced that by this argument that he may indeed be dead. And indeed, yes, apparently, the way he speaks and the way these recordings really are, he speaks kind of I don't know quite how to explain it in English terms, but in apocalyptic terms, in religious terms and stuff like that, everything is kind of, spoken of in very vague ways that can be translated any number of ways. And obviously there's a whole industry in the United States of people who are translating everything he says and everything that Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad says in the most negative possible way. And there's no doubt that a lot of people are doing this.
And it's almost like the stock market. The more negative, the more money is spent and the more money is made.
Sure, follow the money. And, you know, there's a huge domestic homeland security industry, people who are profiting from the terrorism issue. These people are the ones that you will see popping up on Fox. It's not just Fox. It's all of the mainstream media. You'll see these people popping up again and again and again selling their goods. And these people are personally profiting from the fear of terrorism and the homeland security industry.
To your point, Chertoff sells the body scanners, and the underwear bomber shows up just in time to help them push that. On that subject, young Matalib, there's been reports in Veterans Today, for instance. I read some things that said that actually his father, back in Nigeria, who tried to warn the American embassy, is a lot more connected than people would understand, that he was working with the defense industry there, which is heavily connected with Israel and the Mossad and so forth, and that such a person, if he walked into the American embassy, would be taken very seriously. Do you have any knowledge about that?
Well, yeah, I've read the same accounts that you've seen, that basically in Nigeria, someone like his father basically is very connected to the Nigerian government. He should have been taken very, very seriously when coming into the U.S. Embassy, and I think he was. I think the CIA took him rather seriously. The problem was that the U.S. government is such a cumbersome organization that information doesn't always get where it should get.
Well, Phil, I'd like to thank you for joining us for the first time here on the radio. I know that I've had a very good time speaking with you and getting your take on things, and I hope that we have you back on a more regular basis.
I'd be delighted.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks.
All right, good friends. That was Phil Giraldi. Served this country in various capacities, including as an officer in the CIA for many years and on the Ron Paul campaign as a foreign policy advisor. And if you ask me, continues to serve this country by speaking out and bringing some clarity to a lot of these very important subjects that otherwise are left to just spin us to death. For instance, from Rupert Murdoch Publications, as you mentioned. In any case, have a great evening, friends. We're going to be back tomorrow with Nicholas George.